This is the son of PCJ.
This is London. This is London.
The Voice of Russia World Service.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
This is the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland, with a relay transmission via Bonaire in the Netherlands Antilles, directed to New Zealand.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
Bonjour à vous si vous nous rejoignez sur Radio France Internationale. Il est 5h à Paris.
This is Radio Ukraine International.
This is the English program of Radio Deutsche Welle, Germany's international broadcasting service.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette Macquarie and Keith Perron.
Hello and welcome again to the program. I'm Keith Perron. Coming up today, we're going to talk about jamming and a new ebook called Fire Drake Exposed, China's Secret Shortwave Jamming Project. The author will be joining us on the program today. Dan Hensley will be here for a look at propagation, and we're also giving away a fascinating book, so stay tuned for the details. This is Media Network Plus, the show that sounds just as good in reverse. I'm wondering if it does. Let's take a listen. First, here's Paulette with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
ABC Managing Director Mark Scott has announced a senior staff move. Lindley Marshall has been appointed head of ABC International, overseeing Radio Australia, Australia Network, and international development. According to an internal memo from Scott, the move is after an extensive international search to fill the position left vacant by the retirement of Murray Green. The memo continues, "This convergence strategy will see Radio Australia, Australia Network, and News 24 working more closely. Lindley will bring to her new position a clear strategic focus and a track record of bringing about significant organizational change. She will also seek to identify other opportunities to take existing ABC content into international markets." Radio Netherlands' worldwide English service is being cut on June 29th. An announcement on the RNW website reads as follows. "We're very sorry to inform you that the English service of Radio Netherlands Worldwide will be closing at the end of this month. However, we will continue to provide articles online relating to our new brief, promoting free speech in areas where people are not free to gather information or to form and express independent opinions. The measures are a result of steep budget cuts imposed by the Dutch government and a concomitant change in focus. Providing the world with a realistic image of the Netherlands, as we have proudly done since 1947, will no longer be one of our statutory duties. On June 29th, we will broadcast a radio show looking back at the past decades of Radio Netherlands Worldwide. And perhaps most importantly, thank you for listening, reading, and riding this bumpy road with us over the years and through the recent difficult times." The Czech Helsinki Committee criticized the procedure by Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty that, it says, gives job seekers employment contracts with a disadvantageous clause, and Czech courts do not effectively protect the affected employees. The Czech Helsinki Committee said that two former employees, Sjezana Pelivan of Croatia and Anna Karapetyan of Armenia, have turned to it for help. The committee stated that both women sign employment contracts with Radio Free Europe with a clause on the choice of law of jurisdiction, that is, the law of the United States. It terminated employment with both of them without stating any reasons. VOA Director David Ensor is in Burma seeking to negotiate terms that would allow the U.S. broadcaster to open a news bureau in the long-isolated Southeast Asian nation. Ensor held introductory talks Monday in the Burmese administrative capital, Naypyidaw, with Parliament Speaker Thuya Shwe Man. The speaker seemed very open and interested in some advice on how best to proceed to bring greater democracy to Burma, said Ensor. So it was a good meeting, and we are interested in VOA's Burmese language service having more ability to report directly on the ground here in the country. Ericsson's June 2012 traffic and market report projects imminent massive growth in 3G and 4G mobile coverage worldwide. The coming changes carry implications for international broadcasters and all media organizations. While 85% of the world's population today is covered by a mobile network, in just 5 years, 85% of the planet will be covered by either a 3G or 4G broadband network. This was among the several significant headlines in Ericsson's just-released Traffic and Market Report, June 2012. And that's the news for this week. I'm Paulette McQuarrie.
That's the sound of Radio Free Asia's Cantonese service being jammed. China uses two types of jammers, programming from China National Radio and FireDrake. They target broadcasters like the VOA, BBC World Service, Radio Free Asia, Sound of Hope, well, any broadcast to China with programming that Beijing deems as offensive. FireDrake Exposed, China's Secret Shortwave Jamming Project by Steve Handler, is a new mini ebook that covers shortwave jamming by China, including FireDrake and other Chinese shortwave jammers. It includes precise direction-finding results, identifying transmitter sites obtained by the ITU registration monitoring sites. Steve Handler now joins us on the line from his home in the United States.
Well, I've been a shortwave listener for close to 50 years, and I like the strange and unusual to relieve my boredom. And I had run across a station that was broadcasting music, and interestingly enough, from the time it signed on until the time it signed off, it never identified itself, which in shortwave broadcasting is very unusual because most shortwave broadcasters seek to have their name out in as many places as possible. And I started to do research on it, and the more I found out about it, the more I realized that, in fact, although it was playing music, its primary purpose was actually to jam or interfere with other stations using the same frequency.
Now, the jamming done by China with FireDrake, because they don't just use the standard Chinese music, they also relay programs from China National Radio, is very different from the jamming that was done by the Soviet Union or is done by Iran or done by Cuba, correct?
Yes, mostly, but not totally. I've identified three different types of jamming that appear to be coming from China. The first one being the FireDrake musical jammer. The second one being the feed of China National Radio 1. And then the third one, which I've simply called the propeller jammer, which basically emits a noise that sounds like an airplane propeller. That, in fact, is very close or very similar to traditional jammers that were used by the Soviets during the Cold War, and also it's currently being used by Cuba against various broadcasters. But that is the, at least insofar as I've been able to find, the least used of all of the jamming efforts of the Chinese. The most popular in terms of hours on the air appears to be the use of China National Radio's CNR1 feed, followed closely by FireDrake.
Now, with the jamming of FireDrake and the propeller jamming and the one from China National Radio, are each of these targeting a specific broadcaster? For example, would FireDrake only target, let's say, the BBC VOA, and would the other one, you know, be targeted towards, say, Voice of Tibet or Radio Free Asia? How is it balanced out? How is it done?
You know, it's there are some core principles apparently, but there's also some divergence. For example, FireDrake appears to be primarily targeting the Sound of Hope and the Voice of Tibet, although from time to time it does jam other broadcasters, whereas China National Radio appears to be the primary means to go after the broadcasts of the Voice of America, Radio Free Asia, Radio Taiwan International, although again, I've seen Firedrake, or actually heard Firedrake, on frequencies used by Radio Free Asia, as well as a number of other stations. The propeller jammer is kind of interesting. I can find no pattern whatsoever other than it is almost never heard alone. It's almost always heard in conjunction with another jammer such as Firedrake, where they will both be on the same frequency.
Your book, Firedrake Expose, I mean, seeking this kind of information, I don't suppose if you, you know, call up Beijing and say, hey, hey guys, what's going on? I don't think they'd ever give you an answer, but how did you research this, and where were you able to find information?
Well, I started by simply listening, and it became kind of contagious. By the time I got to the point where I wanted to do the book, I had somewhere between 1,000, 2,000 separate intercepts that I had made of Firedrake and CNR1 and the propeller jammer. And I have to back up and say that there are numerous broadcasts of China National Radio which are intended for general audiences that, in fact, are, at least in my belief, not used for jamming. They're legitimate broadcasts. China National Radio, when they are broadcasting at the same time and on the same frequency as somebody like the Voice of America or Radio Free Asia or BBC or Radio Taiwan International, it became pretty apparent what the, at least to me, what the end goal of this was, which was the disruption or interruption of the broadcasts of other broadcasters. Now, I should also say that the targeted broadcasts of Voice of America and of Radio Free Asia have been very specific. The targeted broadcasts generally are either in Mandarin or Tibetan, and almost no other languages are affected by us.
Now, when you're researching the book, did you just by chance say, you know, let me try, let me contact somebody in China and see if I get a response? Did you try that?
No, I have never formally tried to contact the Chinese government regarding it. It seemed obviously kind of pointless. If the Chinese government was interested in taking credit for their jamming of using Firedrake, they'd identify. And when you have a broadcast of 30, 40, 50 minutes of solid music with no identification at the beginning, at the end, or during, it's pretty obvious that they don't want to take the credit for it. Number two, to be quite honest with you, since they don't identify who's broadcasting, I really would have no idea who within the Chinese government to specifically contact.
And what about other agencies, for example, like the International Telecommunications Union, the IBB in the U.S., or the FCC?
All of those, I'm sure, have the same, probably actually much better capability than I do to monitor the situation. I did enlist the assistance, and perhaps enlist is not the right word. I was able to obtain from an ITU-registered monitoring site data on a series of jamming broadcasts over the course of a period of time. And what I was looking for there specifically was the actual geographic coordinates of the transmitters involved. I was pretty much dead sure, based on circumstantial evidence, that it was coming out of China. But I was reluctant to print this in a book until I had some sort of official documentation that said, yes, the jamming broadcasts are originating in China.
The thing that's always been, I found extraordinary with the jamming done by the Chinese, I would have to say probably the lack of countermeasures by some of the broadcasters that are being jammed. I mean, in the days of the Soviet Union and in other parts of Eastern Europe where broadcasts were jammed from the VOA and Radio Liberty, it was common to do some frequency hopping, but I've noticed a lot less of that now. Did you touch on that aspect?
Yeah, the book does cover that, and I'm sure my opinions are not shared by the various governments whose broadcasts are being jammed. I guess what I would say on that is that I am aware of some of the countermeasures being used by stations simply based on deduction and other means of figuring it out. I probably would not want to get into it in a public forum because frankly, I'm not interested in passing out information that may be of help to countries that use jamming to circumvent the countermeasures. And I should say that I'm very philosophically opposed to the use of jamming of shortwave broadcasts of international broadcasters, no matter what country is involved in the jamming. I would be just as opposed whether it was coming from China or, frankly, anywhere else. I think that it's wrong, and frankly, the world community should not tolerate it.
While you were working on the book, did you discover any information? I mean, it's been rumored and it's been discussed that, for example, the Chinese have assisted other nations, namely Ethiopia comes to mind, to jam broadcasters, and also Zimbabwe. Have you seen the same kind of pattern with some other countries that jam that are very friendly with China?
You know, I've read the similar news accounts regarding various countries. I've not myself made any attempt to study it. I've pretty much simply been working on FireDrake. Although now that the book is out and in publication, my next step will most likely be to take a look at other jamming actors throughout the world to try to publicize what's happening so that people can be galvanized to contact these countries and say, hey, you know, enough is enough.
Now, of course, you remember the jamming that was done during the Cold War by the Soviet Union. How would you compare, let's say, with on a scale of being effective, the jamming from China compared, let's say, to the jamming that was done by the Soviet Union? Is it comparable, or are the Chinese more efficient at it, or were the Soviets more efficient at it?
You know, it's hard to compare, but I can give you a couple of specifics. I have read, and although, yes, I'm very familiar with the jamming that was going on by the Soviets during the Cold War, I read at one point they were running, give or take, about 2,000 jamming transmitters. I don't believe that the Chinese are running anywhere near that number. On the other hand, the number of international broadcasts on shortwave today is much smaller. The Soviets were also pretty much jamming all languages, which the Chinese appear to be limiting only to Mandarin and Tibetan at this point.
Yeah, because I've noticed, you know, when I was living in China, the BBC World Service in English, there was no problem listening to it. The same with the Voice of America. But every time I would tune, let's say, to the Chinese services of these stations, they would be jammed. But the thing that was always extraordinary to me is if I was outside Beijing by around, say, 200 or 300 kilometers, the jamming was less effective. Now, I know that in the Soviet Union, that was actually the case. I mean, not too long ago, I interviewed a woman, and she went to the Soviet Union and said, hey, you know, quite often, broadcasts were recorded outside of Moscow. They would make tape copies and then distribute them, throw people inside Moscow.
You know, I've heard very similar anecdotal stories. I've never been to either the Soviet Union during the Cold War or, frankly, since, nor have I been to China. But I have communicated and talked to people involved. And although the Russians were, from time to time, extremely effective, the Soviets were extremely effective in jamming during the Cold War, they couldn't be in all places at all times, and with the size of the Soviet Union being what it was, a substantial portion of the country was able to intercept the broadcasts and listen to them. I would imagine the same thing is true in China. You can't be everywhere all the time, and I imagine that they're focusing their jamming to block specific metropolitan areas or population centers, which is going to leave a good chunk of the country open to reception. That said, with comparing both the Soviet Union and during the Cold War and China, the number of targets of the Soviet Union were much smaller in terms of what they were trying to block than the number of targets that China seems to be concerned about.
During, let's say, any given hour, how many broadcasts, let's say, would be jammed by China at one specific time? What is the most?
You know, all I can tell you is that what I'm able to receive from my location, and that is probably not a good indicator of what's actually happening in China itself. However, I've heard as few as two or three and as many as close to a dozen frequencies jammed at the same time. Considering the propagational variations, I wouldn't be surprised if the total number of frequencies were not the dozen or so that I might be able to hear, but many more, just because I don't know what power the Chinese are running on their transmitters. I don't know whether they have high-powered and low-powered or if they're all high-powered. I don't know what the directional beam of their antennas are. I do at least know where their transmitting sites are at this point, which are enumerated in the book.
Are these sites that are also used, let's say, for broadcast purposes for, let's say, CRI or any relay exchanges that they have, the same sites?
Some of them appear to be. Some of them do not appear to be. But I guess, again, the problem is that unlike a democracy where you can basically almost pull out a phone book and look up the location of transmitter sites, China Radio International has identified many of their sites publicly, but I would not at all be surprised if they have other sites that, for whatever reason, they have not identified publicly. So although I may have transmitter site A, B, or C, all of which may be known China Radio International sites, D, E, and F, which do not appear to be those, may very well be used by China International also for very legitimate broadcasting purposes.
Stephen Handler, author of Firedrick Exposed, China's Secret Shortwave Jamming Project. And if you'd like to learn how to get a copy, you can either email us, and I'll give out the email later on in the program, or check out our Facebook page, and we'll put a link up to it there. Just do a search for PCJ Media and PCJ Radio in Facebook. Well, this week we are giving away a book. It's an absolutely fantastic book. We only have one. We only have one. The book is called The Worldwide Listening Guide by John Figliozzi, one of the two guys that's behind the SWL Fest that takes place in the United States. This is, well, I mean, it's very detailed. It has frequencies, programming. It's like a, you know, a TV guide for shortwave listening. It has live radio, podcast, terrestrial, Wi-Fi, AM, shortwave, analog, digital. Oh, I'm running out of air. So many different types. We have one copy to give away. If you'd like to get a copy, just send us an email, mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. And the first person to send us an email, that's right, the first person to send us an email at mnp@pcjmedia.com will be a winner. So get that off right away. Now, what can we expect propagation-wise over the next 7 days? Here's our propagation editor, Dan Hensley.
The 10.7-centimeter flux June 16th and 17th is 125. On June 18th, a 10.7-centimeter flux of 120. From June 19th to June 21st, a 10.7-centimeter flux of 115. On June 22nd, a 10.7-centimeter flux of 110. The A index will be 5 on June 16th and 17th, then spiking with an A index of 15 on June 18th and 12 on June 19th. The A index then drops on June 20th to 8, continuing to drop, and it will be 5 on June 21st and June 22nd. The KP index starts off at 2 on June 16th and 17th, then it rises to 4 on June 18th and 19th. The KP index becomes 3 on June 20th, then dropping back down to 2 on June 21st and June 22nd. Sunspot groups 1494 and 99 are passing out of view at this time. Sunspot groups 1504, 05, 06, and 07 are in view. All of these new sunspot groups are crackling with C-class solar flares. No large coronal holes have been observed in this reporting week. A minor geomagnetic storm that crested during the opening hours of June 12, 2012 is subsiding now. At maximum, it ranked 5 on the 0 to 9 K index scale of magnetic disturbances and turned the skies purple over Dawsonville, New Brunswick. The storm was sparked by an episode of negative IMF, that is, south-pointing magnetic fields in the solar wind opened a crack in Earth's magnetosphere. Solar wind poured in and fueled the display. NOAA forecasters estimate a 10 to 20% chance of similar storms in the next 24 hours as the solar wind continues to blow. Back to you, Keith.
All right. Thank you very much, Dan. Well, we've come to the end of the program once again. If you want to have a chance to win the only copy that we have of the Worldwide Listening Guide by John Figliozzi, send your emails to mnp@pcjmedia.com. And it'll be for the first email that we receive, the first one. Well, with that, we've come to the end of the program. We have no more time. I have to leave you right now. So on behalf of Paulette McQuarrie and Dan Hensley, this is Keith Parent wishing you well, hoping to see you all again very, very soon. 73s to you all and 88s to the ladies.